Ignition sequence start. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Radio. I am Mike, and I am joined by the illustrious BD. We are known from time to scribble down our deepest and darkest emotions over at thedreamshake.com and the Why Relentlessly on Twitter. So what's up, B? How you doing tonight?
Not too great, not too bad. Either way, you're getting by one day at a time. Sucks being a Bills fan, but I'm stuck here with you. How are you doing?
Well, I'm a Texans fan, so I feel your pain. That's why we're going to talk about a team who actually looks like they're headed the right direction, you know. And I'm glad we're finally getting this going. I mean, it seems like we've been talking about this for about a year now. And after Dwight signed here, we knew we had to get this thing up and running. It's crazy. I mean, when I started Love You Still Blue, the Texans podcast about 4 years ago, there was no one doing Texans podcasts. Now there's about 10 of them. You know, and now Jason Friedman dropped out of the game, and Dave Hardesty at Clutch Fans does one about once, maybe twice a month. So it appears there might be somewhat of a demand.
Until they listen to the first day of, like, episode or two, and then they start to see through our little shtick. But, you know, for now, let's ride it.
Well, let's try to keep your kitty porn comments down to a minimum, and we'll be able to hold them past the first 2 minutes.
Dude, it took us, like, 2 minutes to hit the first, like, pedophilia joke. I'm kind of impressed.
I'm actually quite disappointed. But since this is the debut episode, I figured we'd go ahead and say a little bit about how a guy from Atlanta and some Mountie from Canada became big Rockets fans. Would you want to do the honors and go first?
Oh, eh? I'll take after that, you hoser. Well, easiest way to put it, I had access to WGN, Chicago Network, up towards Canada. Because for some reason, all that shit comes right over from the lake. But I got normalized to seeing Michael Jordan. I'm like, big whoop, he can score. Any asshole can score. I was short, I could shoot, and I could drive when I was a kid, so it was there. But then just one 7-foot dude from Africa just comes around, punches shots, and punishes Jordan's teams. I had the chance to say, sure, I'll like that team so I can walk into school and talk shit to all my friends. And, you know, it's just, you gotta run counter. That's been my MO for, what, you know, 2-3 years at the Dream Shake up until I started trying to take it semi-seriously, and now we're here. How about you, Peachtree?
Well, like you insinuated there, growing up in Atlanta, I was a big Dominique Wilkins fan. I mean, there was never a team outside the Bulls, obviously, that I liked seeing the Hawks play more than Houston. And, you know, part of that was because I always had family here. But, you know, I always kind of rooted for their teams, yes, even the Oilers. And the bigger reason was probably because of some dude named Dream. But this was before League Pass or anything like that, so I only got to see him twice a year. You know, or maybe some random time NBC decided they want to show a Rockets game. They show them about as nationally as much back then as they do now. Well, pre-Dwight. But so I moved here in 93, and that was the year that the Hawks traded Dominique Wilkins away, and that gave me the excuse I needed to embrace my new hometown team. Here we are.
And I couldn't be more disappointed to this day.
Well, before we really dive into our topics we're going to talk about tonight, we do want to point out that we are recording this prior to the Portland game. So if some crazy shit happens in that game, that's why we're not talking about it. But before we start, I guess we should say a nice word. But for Kevin McHale, I can't think of a guy that's having a rougher year with personal family issues. And that's something that, thankfully, I haven't had to deal with yet. And all that nice stuff you can possibly say about him, I'm saying it right now. So.
Yeah, I can't imagine. Yeah, I can't imagine going through what that guy has in the last, you know, calendar year, and just still being able to get out there and keep running. So the fact that he hasn't, you know, told the team, "Hey, I've got way too much shit hitting the fan," really impresses me.
Right. We're going to touch on Mikhail a little bit later, but we've got to start this off, obviously, talking about Dwight Howard. Since this is the debut episode, we never really got to talk about the acquisition or whatever, and I think you and I have been pretty much just happy as pigs and shit ever since the signing, but the stuff I'm hearing about Dwight that people complain about with him, I want to say I can see why people get frustrated sometimes. I mean, you know, he gets to the post and he loses the ball all the time, whatever, but he's clearly also the best player on the floor sometimes. But I think a lot of it, and I've noticed this with all the teams here because I'm actually here and I hear this stuff and I hear the horrible callers that call on the radio stuff. I really just don't think Houston knows how to handle having star players. I mean, look what they did to McGrady.
You know, I look at it as Houston's a team that hasn't moved on from their glory years. It's like anybody who was big into grunge, right? It was the big thing in the early 90s. They're still wearing their flannel, still convinced that it's there somewhere, and they adhere to those two last little shred links they have, like Pearl Jam and like old Kurt Cobain releases. But Rockets fans, for some reason, are convinced like that is totally relevant today, that their history is still there, so that every star player needs to immediately deliver a title. I mean, you see it right now where they pile on Dwight for not averaging 30 points and 20 rebounds a game. But what people are glossing over, they will focus on individual performance and totally forget that in the NBA, it's a guard-oriented league. Dwight is absolutely fucked when he gets a guy on his hip who's about, you know, a foot and a half shorter than him, and all of a sudden James Harden or Chandler Parsons is all like, "Hurt, dirt, time to launch threes."
That's the best way I could have put it. Something that you said earlier in the season, something you wrote, was that you disagreed with, basically they're using him as a glorified garbage man, and that just feels like it's wasting his talents. And you know, it's got a lot of people saying, oh, he'll never be the same as he was in Orlando or whatever. Well, you know, in Orlando, they never gave him the ball with his back to the basket 11 feet away. And it seems like we do that so much. And, you know, I think even all the way back to when Hakeem played here, it seems like this team has never understood how to get a big man the ball in the low post.
And it's the most frustrating thing, and I know I'm going to catch a lot of hell for saying this, but back when Yao was our featured guy, two of the best entry passes to Yao I saw consistently were Shane Battier, and this is one's girl. Rafer Alston was actually, he was one of the few people who understood, I'm throwing the ball to a guy who's massive. I'll throw it high so that his hand can secure it when this guy is sealed. And here in Houston, they assume that if they're going to throw it high, they're going to throw it at the rim. 9 times out of 10, that just results in, hey, Dwight, can you maybe get this offensive rebound? Or they maybe try to force establish him, at which point they miss all the easy opportunities for some reason unbeknownst to me. You see a lot of those really shitty drive and panic handoff things, which thank God Jeremy Lin's gotten better at that. But I can't fathom how hard it is to pass the ball to a 7-foot like freak of nature.
Right. I mean, guy's got he's got shoulders bigger than most football players with their pads on. So, I mean, I'm with you. I don't understand. Throw the ball up high. Who gives a F if they're fronting the guy? That's the worst thing to me. Oh, they're fronting him. I just can't go to him now. But, you know, at least they're actually throwing lob passes that, I don't know, aren't 4 feet above his head to the left anymore. So, baby steps.
I don't know if I can give you that. I mean, even Stevie Wonder can see these lob passes we're getting are absolutely friggin' dreadful. And the guy's still got freak athleticism after that back injury. And it seems like we'll go through stretches where they're like, all right, this is going to be a lob. Usually over to the opposite corner where we've got a three-point shooter camped. But then you get those little shards of hope where James Harden just has the perfect ones from the three-point line. Mm-hmm. Then every single easy lob just sails over Dwight. And I really don't understand how you do that.
So what do you think, or what would you like, rather, to see them do to further, I guess, feature his talents in the offense?
Okay, for this one, it is. You have to force feed him, but you also have to have a team that's not, I guess, functionally just idiots trying to get it done. And I caught some flack on it for Red 94 because apparently context is dead or basic understanding amongst a lot of Rockets fans. And you have to get the ball to him in the post. Yeah, he'll turn it over from time to time, but people have amnesia. Like when we had Kevin Martin and Yao Ming, it's about getting the ball into the post, piling on the fouls, and getting in the penalty. You can do that with Dwight if you give him the ball in the post. Yes, his post moves are hot garbage. My 4-year-old niece has better wounds. But he's going to get hit more often than not on that because it's easier to send him to the free throw line than risk him gorilla dunking it or hitting a hook shot. So the remedy to the Dwight situation? Just feed the guy and quit being so goddamn stupid.
Let the boy eat! I think something that this is just kind of the NBA in general, something that's always bothered me. I mean, ever since I was a little kid, I cannot handle the way the NBA calls big men. I hate that, oh, well, they're big, so that a foul that's going to be a foul on any player, not 7 feet tall and huge, that's a foul, but oh, no, they're big, they can handle it. And I mean, the guy gets hammered sometimes. And, of course, you know, you try to be objective about this and be like, well, you know, they're not calling that another end. But sometimes it's just like, dude, he just got mugged, and they don't call a foul. But that's just a personal thing with me. I don't have anything really to add with that you didn't say about integrating him into the offense better. Just I don't like these stretches where he'll start a game, you know, 18 points and 16 rebounds in the first half, and it's like 2 points in the second half.
Oh, God.
And that's usually on his 2-for-6 free throws in the second half, you know. So I don't understand how it just, like, disappears. And I know you want to get into this myth of the hero ball thing and all that, but I do think there's a lot of the, hey, we've got a 20-point lead in the third quarter, let's just jack up threes. This team suffers from that big time. And you think about games like that one in Dallas that really still just sticks in my brain, that of the game that they should have won this year. So, yeah, just force-feed the guy the ball.
Actually, you talking about the jacking up shots at 20. You gave me two flashbacks here, so sit down and deal with them and shut up. The first one is when you're talking about not going to a guy when he's hot. First thing that went through my head was, yeah, we survived that last year in Buffalo with Chan Gailey. Yeah, absolutely. C.J. Spiller, 100-plus yards in the first half. Second half comes around, fuck him. But the second, and
the wounds go deep.
Oh, my God. It's searing, man. You guys had a good season last year. We've been hot garbage for 14 years. But the big thing that stands out to me is maybe we need to bring Brad Miller back. And what I mean by that is this team just doesn't know what it takes to be ruthless. So you wouldn't want to take any of the current Rockets hunting with you because they won't kill the animal. They're getting wounded. They'll sure as hell shoot it in the leg and just cripple it. But then they'll let it limp off and maybe fling a couple shots at it. Brad Miller, you need the outdoorsman to just come in and be like, all right, Bambi, open wide, here comes the bullet. And Houston just doesn't have that right now.
Right. Words that I hate here is this team lacks a killer instinct, but, I mean, sometimes it's obvious. And when you have two star players, you know, you always have that, well, is there enough ball to go around? When it's in the fourth quarter, Dwight usually doesn't want the ball because he doesn't want to be shooting free throws. So, you know, where he's key at in the fourth quarter is playing defense and getting rebounds. But, you know, you can't just completely go away from it. And I'm sorry if I hear one more time on local radio hosts talking about, oh, you've got to sit Dwight down in the fourth quarter. You don't sit the best defensive center in the league down in the fourth quarter. That's absolutely fucking asinine.
Who the hell do you sit him for? Oshik and his maybe 55% up from Dwight's, you know, 48%?
That's what they were saying at the time, but, you know, since he's the invisible fucking man now, ain't nobody talking about him anymore except in Atlanta and Philadelphia where he's probably going, so. Hey, that's a good segue. The hottest topic since Dwight's side is where does Omer go? And there's all kinds of stuff going around lately, but I'll let you go ahead. Where's the smartest place for him to land, and for what in return?
You hit me with something that I haven't put much thought into, because honestly, I think he either doesn't get moved or he gets moved for like those scrap bench depth players. Just because Morey was obsessed with collecting the little things. You and I were talking about it on Twitter earlier. He doesn't need to be Gollum. I mean, he's already got his prize. He doesn't have to sit there and be like, oh, assets, my process. Like, it's not that anymore. This roster's set, and if Oshik keeps whining, just send. Essentially, I advocate treating him kind of like Royce White, because we're winning without Oshik. And you know what? His value's known. He's under contract for another year if he wants to keep sulking and everything. But to directly answer your question and get off my soapbox that I placed in front of myself, anywhere in the Eastern Conference, really, some people were mind blown that I was like, oh, if you just ship him off to Miami and try to work something where you can leverage a Chris Bosch, that's roughly the only way I'd want to replace Terrence Jones, because I do have a massive man crush. I'm responsible for that really stupid haircut. I cut those locks of hair off from my Terrence Jones doll. That's the only auspice under which I would want to replace him, if I can get a Bosch, because at that point, I've just given Houston everything they need to compete for a title by giving them like a defensive perimeter-oriented four, and I just gave Miami everything they need to finally deal with Indiana. And at that point, I don't care if that makes Miami a championship contender, because it makes me a championship contender too. I'll see you late in the postseason, and we'll duke it out for an NBA title. How about you? Where do you think he's going?
Well, I want to preface this by saying, I think a problem that Rockets fans have always had, and especially in the Morey era, because he's kind of spoiled them, is they tend to overvalue their players. Now, Oshik's a proven starting center in the league, and I mean, those are not easy to come by these days. I mean, you got 6'9" guys playing center. But, so, you know he's got value. We also know he's been pouting, and he just hired, you know, power agent, broker guy, Arm Teller, it's his job to make sure the guy gets moved somewhere, and he's going to make sure he gets moved somewhere where he's going to get to play. So, if you believe that Morey's going to settle for that, I guess you call it strong arming, which I think with this stuff coming out that it's going to be done by the 19th, means that he's done with it. He's tired of this. 1 week he wants to play here, the next week, no, he wants to be traded. So, I'm not expecting this big, great prize. Everybody that's expecting a star player needs to relax. One thing that I remember in the offseason is that Daryl said, I'm not going to cripple our future moves by going out and getting another max guy or something like that. So I really don't think he's planning on going after a Love, or definitely not going to be an Aldridge now with the way they're playing. So I set my targets low. I've been saying Paul Millsap forever just because he made sense, but that was also before Terrence Jones blew up. I think a lot of us were confident in Terrence Jones, and we even had the highest of hopes, but after he came out and pretty much shit the bed in preseason, we got a little more realistic with it. I'd like to see Jones stay and do what he's doing for peanuts, basically. I mean, Millsap he's got a pretty friendly contract for what he brings, but they bought on Millsap. I mean, him and Terrence Jones are both going to get minutes. I mean, I don't really care about the who starts thing. That's just what Lynn fanboys do, is care about who starts. But, you know, that's going to give Caspi less minutes. It's going to give Garcia less minutes. And I don't know if you want to take your shooters off the floor. But I started leaning towards thinking like a Spencer Hawes and maybe like flip second round picks or something like that would be like the max I could see us getting. Or if he can get a first round pick from anybody, I don't know who he's going to get it from, though, especially not a lottery pick, because I don't see any contender really having the contender is the only one that's going to be willing to give him a first round pick for him. And, what does Daryl Morey want with a 25th or 27th or 28th first-round pick? So,
well, you know, for me, you mentioned strong-arming, and, you know, Daryl Morey to me he's the Ben Roethlisberger of GMs. It's not whether or not you want it, it's whether or not he's going to give it to you. And I guess something I got to ask you, when you talk about Rockets fans overvaluing particular players, but then you talk about the wizardry that Daryl Morey tends to pull off, Can you ever actually overestimate a player when Daryl Morey's, you know, getting more return on investment with every single trade? I think maybe on that one, Rockets fans might have one on you, in that if they overrate it a little bit, it's only because Daryl Morey extracts that level of value out of pretty much everything he does.
Oh, I can see that. What I mean is more stuff like, oh, we can't trade Aaron Brooks, he's the best, you know, and then a year later they're like begging to give the guy away. You know, it just seems like they expect the world, and I do. I agree with you that Morey spoiled us in that way. So thinking, oh, we can't trade Terrence Jones ever unless it's for LaMarcus Aldridge, relax, all right? I'm definitely not saying trade Terrence Jones, something like that. I was just giving it as an example. But to finish up on the Omer stuff, I don't expect anything that's going to make us be like, holy shit, that's championship right there.
No, I expect essentially the same thing we got at the trade deadline a couple years ago, where we just kind of shuffled things around and picked up some picks. I think that was the Brooks and Dragic swap, or the year that we got Hashim Thabeet, who, yeah, I believed in.
I was going to bring that up when you were saying that you had a man crush on Terrence Stowe. I was like, yeah, but you always pick some guy to have a man crush on. But at least this one's actually good.
I was going to say, I wrote before the season that Jones needs to be the starter no matter how many homeless people he stomps on, so.
Stomp on more of them, shit.
If it's working, that's the source of his power.
If there's any homeless people listening to the program, I do not apologize. Okay, I believe that you wanted to speak about James Harden. Exactly what was that?
A way to pin it all on me. It's a few things, honestly. One, Rockets fans, just quit it with the buzzwords. We get it. It was really cool that you saw a headline that was trumpeted on ESPN and Sports Illustrated, and you know, maybe for some god-awful reason you're reading CBS. Or maybe you read one of Grunge Dave's posts about Hero Ball and you really want to be in cool with him, so maybe he'll come to your birthday party and give you a nice touch on the ass. But let's abandon those tropes and those stupid-ass things and start evaluating the guy as he is. And one of my problems I have with James Harden, I love him, and but for a few decimal points, my reputation would be preserved amongst all Rockets fans. But we've got to start cutting him some slack, especially the headline I referenced was about his defense. Yeah, his defense is visibly shitty. He's also picking off passes at a pretty good rate. He gambles. He carries this offense because God knows that we're not using Dwight Howard to help shoulder that load, and we get some random explosions from Lynn or Parsons from time to time. But I just want you to really sit down and consider it. Right now, at this point in the season, defensive win shares, bitch about whatever stat you want. I don't care. Put it in the comments. I'll make fun of you. But right now, he's actually giving you the same amount of defensive win shares as a guy like a Tony Allen. He has a defensive rating that's actually not that terribly far off. So for everybody saying his defense absolutely kills this team, no, team defense kills this. But my concern is whether or not James Harden's evolving as a player. Does he still want to play the up-and-down game? That's kind of a major pain in the ass that he did last season. Because admit it, the roster is totally different and reworked now. Or are we just kind of seeing a guy who's stubbornly stuck, or is he making progress? Where do you come down on it, Mike? And remember, I will give you so much shit if I hear you say hero ball or anything.
The words hero ball have made me want to quit Twitter while watching Rockets games because, I mean, you can't say we've got to get a star player who's going to take that final shot at the end of a game, and then when he does it, if he doesn't make it 100% of the time, say, oh, la, 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 hero balls. Yeah, and whatever. It's like you said, dumb word. You want to sit there and talk about his defense. Yeah, I think what people are so frustrated about his defense is that, as you saw in the Golden State game and the Atlanta game, when he actually wants to play defense, he can. And I think that's what frustrates people. But, I mean, that's young players, man. They have to, and in my opinion, that's on Coach McHale. He needs to grab him by his freaking beard and say, God damn it. Play some defense. You can't just go out there and be a glory hound all the time. That's where I would love to have Jeff Van Gundy on this team. That's a different story. But no, I'm not one of those hero ball people or whatever. James is going to be the type of guy who's going to score you points in bunches. He's going to have that rare night where he goes 0-for-10 from the three-point line. I mean, even Michael Jordan had bad shooting nights once in a while. It happens. I do think if he does never play consistently, at least average defense, I'm not sure I'm ready to say this team's ready to win a title, but I do think, like you said, a lot of this is team defense, and we need to spread that, spread the wealth around, as your president would say.
All right, commie radio. two things. I say that a lot. I got to start thinking of more than two, just because I'm at the level of a six-year-old.
Start saying A and B.
It's still two things.
Then say three things, damn it.
I'll have to come up. Okay, three things. Giraffes have as many vertebrae in their neck as we do. Second,
wow.
Sometimes you look back at like some of the age of NBA players and feel like you've just done nothing with your life. James Harden's 24. That blows my mind. I'm here at 26. I've wasted way too much of my life in education for something that can't pay off. I'm like, he just grows a sweet beard, has horrible teeth, and makes millions playing basketball. And then the last one, let's try to remedy this situation. Let's play the armchair GM that I know you absolutely love on 790 Radio. Who's James Harden's best front court or backcourt mate on this team to help cover up for some of those deficiencies in his game?
My first answer, just off the top of my head, is going to be Patrick Beverley because of his tendency to be able to lock down a player or frustrate a player. But honestly, sometimes I like seeing him and Lynn play together just because they both can attack the basket so well. But I'm not really sure there is a slam dunk answer for me on that one, to be truthful.
I just hate that you didn't take the bait. I wanted you to shit on Jeremy Lin a little bit. But,
I actually like Lin. I like Lin. I just don't like the obsessive Lin fans that follow me on Twitter. And if I ever, I mean, you said something kind of similar that comedy or humor is lost on Jeremy Lin fans. Like, all I would say was that people were saying Jeremy Lin's so bad because they were remembering how bad he was last year. And then that one game where he went off for like 30-something points and went nuts. I was like, oh yeah, Jeremy Lin's garbage. Sarcastically. And I got attacked because they thought I was being serious. You know, I was like, I guess I should start using the sarcasm hashtag, or I can just use the fuck off hashtag. But by the way, you don't have to tweet me to tell me you're unfollowing me. I don't care. Anyway,
you know, I want one of those. I want to piss somebody off that much.
Follow him, folks, at QuestionablyVD.
If you follow me long enough, you get at QuestionableVD, but whatever.
All right, what's next? I believe you want to say, did the Rockets have an identity yet?
Yeah.
I do not believe so.
You got to love my stupid esoteric questions.
No, those are good.
It shouldn't be relied upon for programming. As far as whether or not...
If you leave this up to me, I'm going to be like, what was Dwight Howard's best dunk ever? You know? Let's do top 10 Dwight Howard dunks.
Oh, we can put it together as a slideshow and maybe submit it to BuzzFeed, too?
With pop-ups.
Yeah, and then I will kill myself.
That's all it takes? Damn it! Holy, I knew.
I've got a very low threshold at this point, buddy. As far as whether or not the Rockets have an identity, that ties into the James Harden thing. I'm confused about it. We'll put together a win where you have to just execute and, you know, force the other team to know they're playing your game, and that's what we did with Orlando. That it was just, they got back into the game, but it was purely on the Rockets' terms, and that was a beautiful win. Then there was the game like the Spurs. High point of the season, like, oh my god, we knocked off the King of the Hill. We did it with execution. We did it the right way. And then you turn around and just lay out those shit games against Phoenix and Utah. And it's because Houston just wants to run, and they want to play that loose, fast ball. And that's not how you win a title. The Phoenix Suns showed us that, and it's not something you should be doing to run up the win total in the regular season. Because this team needs all the practice it can get playing a half-court execute game and run when you can, when it's beneficial to you. And it doesn't seem like the Rockets want to do that. It seems like they want to play YMCA ball, and then when it starts falling apart, they're like, whoa, I don't know what happened. Maybe not hitting any three-pointers in a night isn't that productive, but we'll still put up 40.
You know, something that bothers me a lot out here...
Herpes?
...is... There are other things, but as far as sports radio goes, it's something that bothers me is when people, they're so scarred about the Texans, because the Rockets could win a championship and people would call in the next day and want to know what the Texans are going to do on opening day. I mean, football is king out here. That's no big secret. But something that bothers me is people that are so scorned by the Texans this year that everything, anytime the Rockets do anything bad, they got to make a comparison to the Texans. I think that's absolutely just pure asshattery, but beating the Spurs and then losing the Jazz was such a Texans move. That's something that they would have done. Go on the road, beat the Patriots or something, and come home losing the Jags. That's just so the Gary Kubiak era, but I digress.
Well, both teams,
there is no identity.
Both teams are really happy to settle for threes.
This is true. Unfortunately, they've got a field goal kicker who can actually kick, but... As far as identity, I mean, we knew. I mean, we've been saying it, that this isn't NBA 2K14. You're not going to make your trades, have this much roster turnover, and come out like gangbusters and just rape the NBA. It's not going to happen. And it's not going to be 25 games together. We're talking like 50-plus games together before this team really can develop an identity and will know who they really are. However, I see these things like, ah, they're the only team in the NBA with top 10 in defense and top 10 in offense. You're like, wow, you know, maybe they're better than we think. Maybe we're just looking at this too critical because we watch every single play. And you listen to – I listen to the BS report of Bill Simmons because as much as I hated Jalen Rose as a player and as a analyst, I actually like their podcast. It's actually really entertaining. But they're just going out like – Zach Lowe was on there. He's like, you guys are wrong. The Rockets are so much better than we think they are. And he's like, if people could stop for 5 minutes putting down Dwight and talking about the Lakers, they'd realize that this team is going to be a problem once they gel. So Zach Lowe is one of my favorite NBA writers because he's actually intelligent and doesn't play Homer like some of those other guys do. So if he can see that, I think we should be able to see it a little bit more.
I caught some shit on Twitter off your followers, actually, when I started deriding it. Or no, it was off Red94's followers, too. When I was deriding a Zach Lowe article, because I'm like, I think he's been a little hypercritical at this point. I think it was less than like 10 games into the season.
Oh, yeah. I remember that one. Yeah.
Yeah. But I'm with you as far as what you're pointing out on Grantland there that, yeah, I think once you look past the fact that ESPN has now set the narrative as to the fact that the Rockets need to like win a title this year, it's not worth it. And
this they only won one. You know that's what it'll be.
Oh, yeah.
When did they back off LeBron when he won two? That's when they finally let LeBron go.
I'm still putting the asterisk on that. He won one. The lockout doesn't count. If people try to asterisk Houston's titles for those two
years. I know all about your LeBron hate. It's well documented.
Oh, you son of a bitch. Yeah, I guess I'll have to replace my Terrence Jones effigy with a LeBron James effigy and maybe get a photo with it, like the cardboard Gerald Wallace thing.
You know, as far as I say Zach Lowe is, the opposite of him when it comes to NBA writers, Ken Berger from CBS, who is still writing Dwight articles.
Yeah, he was the ass hat with the sugar.
Wrote one about
thing,
his
right?
nutrition.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's the one who wrote about Dwight's nutrition. Jesus Christ, move on, Lakers boy.
Well, you do know the last guy to play in LA who had a sugar addiction, right? I mean,
just Shaq.
No, Lamar Odom, dude.
Oh, yeah, Skittles.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
No,
so
Skittles is Marshawn Lynch, is what I'm thinking of Skittles. But no, he liked. Fuck, what candy was that he liked? I can't even remember that.
I just remember he was a sugar fiend, and then he wound up banging the ugly Kardashian and doing crack. So maybe we have to look out for that with Dwight now.
It's true. Enjoy your diabetes there, buddy. But all right, so we did want to touch real briefly on – we were talking about Kevin McHale before we actually came on the air. And when Kevin McHale came on, I was not a fan of the hire. First half of his first year, I wasn't really a fan at all. He did better than I thought he was going to do, but what turned it for me was when he said, you know what, I don't give a fuck how much money you're making. I don't give a fuck what you did before I got here. Kevin Martin, you're crap. You're going to the bench. You know what? He kind of won my heart with that. So while it seems like others seem to be reversing and people that were very big supporters seem to be turning on him a little bit now, I can see the criticisms. Sometimes, you know, matchups, the way that Dwight is used way more than often. And, like I said, not making guys commit to defense. I mean, come on, Kevin. You played big defense. I know you're a defensive guy. Tell these guys to put in some effort.
I guess for me, the way it all boils down, I was a fan of the Kevin McHale hire initially because I looked at the stats and I was like, he's never had a complete team. And when he did great with it. But that all has slowly changed, and a big part of that was the expectations change this season. I'm not stringing them out yet, again, to cite the fact that Rockets fans have trouble reading. I did mention in an article that I put up that McHale's evaluation point for me is going to be around the All-Star break, and whether or not we see the right kind of evolution and transition in this team. And it goes back to the identity question and how he's working other things. And I don't mean lineups as much as somebody's going to piss and moan about that. Because when you're trying to win games, you don't really experiment and tinker. But for me, McHale's real litmus test will be right about You know, a week or two after the All-Star break, are we still flinging ill-advised threes? Is James Harden still failing to, you know, attack the rim to get the other team in foul trouble? Do we get other teams in the penalty still and then just decide, hey, we can totally get fouled on long-range shots? As soon as this team starts playing a little more cerebrally, at that point, if somebody criticizes McHale, I'll, you know, openly call them the moron they are. But I'm more open to criticizing him now than I was before, which is awful.
I know. The thing with coaches is you're only as good as the team's last game. I mean, you beat the Spurs, Kevin McHale's the greatest coach ever. You lose to Utah, it's all his fault. So, I mean, it's just that's just the game. It's just like the quarterback of football. They're going to get all too much credit for good play and too much criticism for bad.
Yeah, but we got a couple listeners who have been pretty consistent on the criticism, so I'll definitely tip my hat to those guys who pointed that stuff out.
And let me shut my fucking dog up. Hey, dog, shut the fuck up.
All right, Michael Vick.
All right, so before we go on to some of our Twitter and site and email questions, because we got some doozies, let's look at the schedule for the next week here, because we want to make this a weekly show, and that depends on if you guys actually listen to it. And I know if you're listening to it. Next five games this week, at Portland, at Golden State, at Sacramento, home for Chicago. I guess next four games and within the next five, the next week. So out of those four games, what do you think our record is?
Out of those four?
In that four-game stretch, what do we finish?
You know what? Is Iggy still out?
Yes.
Okay, so I'm going to give that a win in win against Golden State. I don't care if it's in Oakland. Screw those guys. And I'm purposely skipping Portland.
I guess that means you don't feel very good about tonight's game.
I'll be honest. Since we got Lynn and Parsons back, I feel a little bit better. But I don't know. Portland's shocked the hell out of everybody this season. And even I'm having a hard time criticizing. And I usually don't mind popping my mouth off and justifying it later. I think they come out of that stretch 3-1. I'm going to give Portland at home tonight I'll give them the win and then say we bounce back all right. And then Sacramento, they just traded for Rudy Gay. Going to have trouble integrating him. And then the Chicago Bulls, so long as Arn Tellem's boy Derrick Rose keeps extorting them for playing time and cash, you know?
We already won up in Portland once. I'm not sure I see us winning there twice. So I'm going to go with you on that one. Golden State, fuck Mark Jackson. I don't like that guy. So, yeah, that's the whole – that's the analysis right there. That's where we're going to win because fuck Mark Jackson. Sacramento, I think Boogie Cousins and Rudy Gay are actually going to, like, get in a fight in the locker room before the game. And Chicago is just another team without Derrick Rose. However, I'm going to go 2-2 in this stretch.
Playing the guarded optimist here?
Well – but the teams like Golden State, man, it just if we're hitting our shots, I mean, if we're not hitting our threes, we don't have a chance. And when I saw the genius schedule makers we have that line up 3 days off and then a back-to-back on those 2 days and a late game, I don't like us coming off that game against Portland. So, yeah, I'm going to go 2 losses in a row, 2 wins in a row. So I'll go 2-2.
So we expect a meltdown here after the Golden State game.
Oh, absolutely. Fire McHale. Trade Dwight, keep O'Meara.
Oh, God.
Bench James Harden. Start Lynn for 48 minutes. Yeah. Oh, yeah, it's coming.
No, it's clone it's Lynn. Coming. You need to clone 11 Lynns and just run a Lynn in the rotation.
All right, so let's wrap this up with going through some of these Twitter questions here. First one from your boy Fingolio. Just how important is Aaron Brooks going to be during the next season's championship run, which actually threw me off why he's talking about next season. I guess he thinks this is just our jail year, and next year is our championship year.
I think he thinks you butchered his name.
Fingolio, yeah. Am I saying it? What is it? Was it how do you say it?
Pinocchio. No, it's Fingolio.
Fingolio?
Yeah, I went on a couple of mandates with him when he was out here in D.C.
Fagolio? All right, Fagolio.
It's pasta.
What's up, Thomas?
It's fagioli. It's that pasta dish, right? Okay. How important Brooks is going to be. Clearly, we don't win a title without Brooks. He is the man, especially if he's rocking the red bow tie, because let's face it, that's a level of swag that most people can't quite get to. And
is there his man crush?
Yeah. We went and saw the Wizards game when they played the Rockets last season. We were right over the tunnel where they came out. And for some reason, we just kept talking about Aaron Brooks the entire time. And I think the topic came up a couple of years ago where I was like, you know who would be a great running mate for James Harden? If we get Aaron Brooks back. Then the Rockets went out and acquired him. And we're like, holy shit, this works.
All right. Next one from the real Allen OU. I'm pretty sure he was trolling. He says, discuss a possibility of trading for Melo, but only if we also get Jason Kidd as head coach.
Well, first, you didn't answer the last question, so screw you. But as far as...
I don't think Aaron Brooks will be here next year.
Oof. That hurts me on the inside. But as far as Allen's question, I will discuss that possibility as soon as somebody in his office takes Carmelo Anthony or Jason Kidd out to look for homes.
Oh, jeez. No Melo. No. They don't even want him in New York. That's why they're going to let him walk. And the Lakers are going to give Max money, and it's going to be hilarious.
Yeah, I noticed that the Knicks were like, oh, yeah, we'll trade anybody but Anthony. I'm like, it's not like James Dolan to try to save the money and let Melo walk. I don't know what's going on.
Let's see here. Something about dick pictures. Let's see here.
Well, I mean, on the private email chain for all the writers, we already circulate that stuff around with Pat and Dave, so.
Describe your this is from F22A4 Bandit. Nice name, buddy. Describe your perfect night with Chandler Parsons.
I just kind of assume it would be something nice and low key, like you go to the lacrosse house at the local college, you play beer pong, and you realize somebody slipped you a roofie, and Chandler just takes care of you the rest of the night, slowly stroking your hair, and when you wake up, you realize you spent the entire evening at Florida State University and ruined somebody's chance at the Heisman.
Oh, God, I can't beat that.
I am going to hell for this, and the only consolation I have right now is, like, I might be backing out of the bar exam, so character and fitness isn't so bad anymore.
I'm going to go with what Armin said. He can do whatever he wants as long as we get to go see Frozen afterwards.
So we're going to get so many complaints about that last one.
Whatever. Many Florida State people listen to this. I hope you guys lose to Auburn there. Let's see. Here's a question. This is from Armin. Do you think the Rockets will ever sport the dream rotation of the current starters with Lynn, Garcia, Caspi, and Oshik off the bench? Houston hasn't had everyone healthy yet this season with a specific rotation. Well, I'll go first since I don't think Oshik's going to be here, but for another week, no, because he's quote-unquote injured.
Oh, it's like somebody read my article about Tellum's clients.
What, do they fake injury?
Or once they are injured, they will just preserve the hell out of their own self and just not play.
Right, hip contusion, give me a break.
Well, we saw it with Derrick Rose, we saw it with Tracy McGrady when his knee went out, and you know, McGrady didn't have any leverage either, and he just sat out until we got rid of him. Let's see, I don't think we're going to see it either, although I think Oshik will be here longer than just this next week. I think we're just not going to see them all on the floor at the same time. They might get work through the rotation if that's what Armin was looking for, but I don't think much else.
I think he's about, like, as a second unit, just empty them on, just full on switch out the starting five.
But, God, that would be better than that'd be the fifth seed in the Eastern Conference.
Right. just them four guys alone. Yeah. Play a 5-on-4. He also says, how many teams in the West would definitely beat the Rockets in a best-of-seven series if the other team had home court advantage? How many teams would beat the Houston Rockets? Wait. And how many teams would the Houston if they had home court? God damn it, I can't talk.
Reading's hard. Honestly.
Basically, what teams will we beat with home court? What teams will beat us with home court?
God, that's the thing. The Rockets have been so wildly up and down. I wouldn't give it anybody. I wouldn't give anybody an advantage one way or the other. I think Houston's definitively better at home, and at which point I would favor Houston pretty much every matchup. But I mean, we haven't played Miami yet, right? We haven't played Indiana in the regular season yet. So.
Haven't played Oklahoma yet.
Yeah, so I can't make any comment right now with full comfort. But if we're going to lose to anybody with home court, I'll do the easy route and say I would expect to struggle against Indiana and Miami. And even if they came to Houston, I would still expect Houston to struggle against those teams.
I think unless you're playing Utah in the late 90s and early 2000s, it doesn't, home court doesn't really mean much to me. I mean, the crowd's loud, big deal.
The extra 7 seconds to get a shot off is not bad.
Yeah, so it's I don't think it's that big a deal unless you just full-on cheat like Utah used to. But
used to.
I'll reassess that around the All-Star break when I feel like the team should be close to what they're going to be. So that's just my opinion. Let's see here. Non-serious question. Who's the bigger fanboy? Finoglio with Aaron Brooks or Bobby the Great with Demo?
I don't think you could ever challenge Bobby the Great and Demo there. I mean, I've seen the poetry and fawning letters that Finoglio has written to Aaron Brooks, and they don't eclipse that level of creepy. I've seen the restraining orders, too, and I'm still impressed that I'm giving Bobby the Great the edge here.
That's why I don't spend so much time on the comments section, because I get enough stupidity on Twitter.
You know, so. Hey, I started from the bottom. Now I'm on this.
That's it. Red Nation Radio sounds like commie nationalistic radio station. You know, I joked today that ever since I announced the name of the show, I've gained a bunch of communist followers on Twitter, like Lenin Lover and McCarthyism for Life. And thanks. Cool. You guys pushed me over 1,400 followers. Thanks.
Yeah, I'm still trying to breach 150 or something like that. Fair enough.
You're better off.
I'd like to get it more.
All right, well, I think that's really all we got. Later, we plan on doing stuff like having guests, actual established people, so don't be writing us, asking us, you can all be on the show, too, because the answer's going to be no.
Around the
association.
We'll have Around the Association.
Yeah, Around the Association, where basically we sit and laugh and point fingers at the Knicks and the Nets the whole time. The arms race is going to be so serious this year. You know, that was the narrative in the preseason.
And then the Celtics kick their ass.
That'll be later on when we actually have more of a format for this show. So this first one, we didn't want to put you guys to sleep with let's see here, how long have we been doing now? About 45 minutes. So, yeah, that's pretty good, I think. I don't want this to get mundane like the Love You Still Blue does sometimes. But have anything, any parting words?
I still a little disappointed in myself for that Jameis Winston joke.
Just embrace it, dude. Embrace the heel role.
Whew. I don't know. I mean, Cena, I got to take the Cena route. I want to be the face here forever.
Okay. I'll play Darth Vader. All right, with that, we'll say good night, and we'll talk to you next week.
Take it easy.
Thanks for listening to Red Nation Radio. You can read thoughts and opinions from Mike and BD on thedreamshake.com. You can also follow both on Twitter. Mike is at Zep1978. BD is at QuestionablyBD. Also, be sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. Just search Red Nation Radio. All sounds and music are the property of the original artists, and no infringement is intended.